Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, hello everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw, excuse me, at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, of course, you can always hit us up in the chat room. And we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, folks, I woke up this morning and my inbox was flooded with people saying, worst Raw ever. Absolutely disgusted. I could read comment after comment after comment. People, they've buried the revival. This pissing thing is ridiculous. More authority angles. This is just lazy writing. And all of it is true. However, I'm going to surprise you. I do not think this was the worst Raw in 2018. I don't even think it was the worst Raw in this month. Last week's Raw was far worse than this Raw. Far worse than this Raw. And I'm going to give you a host of reasons why. And to be honest with you, sometimes I get criticized for giving the WWE too much credit as far as their writing ability or where they might be going with something, so maybe I'm off base. But let's start from the beginning. I agree with everyone who said, why is Baron Corbin, Drew McIntyre, and Bobby Lashley suddenly a faction? I don't know. I'll give you that. I have no idea. My presumption is that Baron Corbin thinks he's going to be the next permanent GM and the other guys are sucking up to him. I guess that's what it's supposed to be. Either way, they come out to say that what they're thankful for this year. And of course they're heels. So it's all a bunch of ridiculous things. And Drew McIntyre says he's thankful for the beatdown they gave Braun Strowman, to which they show Braun Strowman on a tape from a hospital bed, which a lot of people have been down on, saying, well, you don't make Braun Strowman look that weak that he's sitting in a hospital bed. It would be better if he was just missing and then he came back or whatever. And 6 to 8 months ago, I would agree with you. But they have shifted Braun Strowman's character. Braun Strowman is not that indestructible monster he used to be. Let's reference back when Kane first came in and Mick Foley hit him in the head with about a 50-pound wrench that he found under the ring that looked more like a baseball bat. And it barely fazed him. It knocked him down. He popped right back up. And then later on, Kane's being beaten with drop kicks from Rey Mysterio. At some point, you have to humanize the indestructibles. And that's what they've done with Braun Strowman. And Braun Strowman's elbow looked terrible. And it added a sense of realism to it. And I don't think it was the worst thing in the world. I just don't. Now, these guys got quite a bit of heat, which is a good thing. And when that heat reached its maximum whatever, the lights went out and Elias came on. And Elias got that spot. Elias got the spot that's interrupting the main heels, which means that they think quite a bit of Elias's potential as a face character, a top face character. Now, whether you like Elias's shtick or you don't like it, some of it was pretty funny. He got the whole crowd to sing Bobby Lashley Sucks, which was pretty good. I mean, the crowd certainly enjoyed it. Made another knock on Leo Rush and child labor laws. And in general, did what we thought Elias would do. And then, much like a face would do, he walks down to the ring to have his match with Bobby Lashley, and the heels don't leave. Baron Corbin and Drew McIntyre stay outside that ring. And while the match itself was fair at best, I think it was a brilliant idea to have Elias clearly win that match with a flying elbow. He clearly had the three count. Lio Rush pulls out the referee. Baron Corbin says it's now a no disqualification match. And Elias gets the hell beat out of him. Now, why is this a good idea? Well, it's twofold. One is, it shows the crowd Elias actually can beat the top guys. He had Bobby Lashley. The message we were sent was Bobby Lashley lost, legitimately, to Elias. And for that reason, Baron Corbin had to make the match a no DQ, and it took all three guys to beat down Elias. They broke his guitar. They hit him with a chair. They did everything they could to get Elias the sympathy from the crowd, which is exactly what a face needs. Now, for the people who are saying, oh, God, another authority angle. God, I can't stand it. I'm with you. And this is not the last time we saw this in the show. I'm with you that we don't need another authority angle. I'm hoping against hope that Baron Corbin is stripped of that authority thing, and this just becomes a faction. And I think that's where it's heading. Tell you more about that in a little while. But for people to say this was an awful opening to the show, I don't get it. It established three top heels, established a top babyface. It made that babyface look very strong in the fact that he had a legit win with two heels on the outside of the ring distracting him against Bobby Lashley, stolen from him. And then it ended up getting him sympathy from the crowd to have his guitar broke and him being beat down. So truthfully, while this is a redundant opening to Raw, feels like we've seen it before, I don't think it was horrible. I found myself kind of nodding, saying, well, they're doing the right thing here with Elias. I especially like the fact that they clearly showed Elias would have won that match. And Baron Corbin had to change the rules in order for Elias to lose. I also loved the fact that they all beat down Elias to the point of even breaking the guitar, because that is going to make Elias a more popular character. The baby faces cannot triumph every week. And then you say, where's all the heels? How come we don't have any heels? Well, the heels got to do bad things if you want there to be heels. When the heels were not doing anything bad, you all were griping. Well, were the heels doing anything bad? Well, they just did. They put Braun Strowman on the shelf, and they beat the hell and broke Elias's guitar. I don't think that's a bad opening, Todd. What's your thoughts?
Oh, you're absolutely right there. It was a pretty good opening. Like you said, they did the heel thing. They got heat for it. They're saying they were thankful. They put down Braun Strowman with an injury. You know, it was a good excitement right there.
And I think they put Elias over as a top face. And I think they've established themselves a little bit. I just don't think this is horrible. Now, for the people who are saying, and I know there's so many of you that are saying, I don't want another authority gimmick. I get it. I totally get that. But let's see where this is going. Let me put on my Kreskin hat. Let me put on my my psychic hat and say that here's where I think it's going. If I'm wrong and I've given the WWE too much credit, then you can call me up and tell me I'm an idiot. Backstage at last night's Raw was Bray Wyatt. I want you to think for a moment, where did Braun Strowman make his debut in the Wyatt family? Where is Luke Harper and Eric Rowan? Well, they're both out injured, but both of them are pretty close to having to be ready to go by now. And if you watch Starrcade, who filled in for Braun Strowman and beat Baron Corbin? They didn't air it. But if you were there live at Starrcade, guess who you saw beat Baron Corbin? Bray Wyatt. So I'm thinking, is it possible that this faction is going to be made to look unbeatable, where everybody says you have to join with them or you're going to be crushed under their thumb? And there just happens to be three of them. And then here comes the Wyatt family as faces to oppose Corbin, Lashley, and McIntyre. I'm thinking that's where they might be going with this. But first you have to establish Corbin, McIntyre, and Lashley. And they started last night. So I'm going to give them a pass on this. We'll wait and see. I don't know if they're going to be an authority figure past TLC. I have this feeling that Baron Corbin is not going to be the general manager of Raw. I think he's getting ready to do full time in the ring again. Maybe this is going to be a faction. But I don't think it's going to be an authority thing. I just don't. If it is, then you're right. This is crap. And unless they bring back the Wyatt family to oppose this, which is what I think they might try, even if they're not an authority figure, so to speak, this could get old quick, yes. But let's give them the benefit of the doubt on this, because when they do things wrong, we're the first ones to say, hey, come on, they're dropping the ball. But in this opening segment, whether you liked it or you didn't, they established three top heels, which we said you always have to do. Show us who your top guys are. Well, last night they did. They established three top heels. And they attempted to establish some top faces and get some sympathy for some top faces. So I'm just not down on that. Lucha House Party versus the Revival. Look, this thing with the Lucha House Party rules and stuff is silly. And everybody knows it. So it happens in Mexico all the time, by the way. And you don't have to tag or anything. That's just Lucha Libre type rules. They do that all the time. So that's what they're trying to push here. And that's what I guess the announcers were trying to say is, well, this is a Lucha Libre thing. But here's the problem. When you make the heels look right and the faces look wrong, you're doing it ass backwards, and the WWE did it ass backwards. Corey Graves is right when he's saying, well, this is absolutely ridiculous. Number one, it's 3-on-2. They're not tagging in. What is this? This isn't a match. You know, it's a handicap match at best. And for the face announcers to say, oh, no, you know, it's cool. They're just having fun in there. Well, then I guess Drew McIntyre, Bobby Lashley, and Baron Corbin were just having fun when it's 3-on-1, right? I mean, how can you justify one and not the other? It makes the face announcers look stupid. So I'm not a big fan of this Lucha Rules thing, Todd. I think it's kind of silly.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. It was silly. It was stupid as Luchador rules. You know, I'd rather see regular tag matches, like traditional, old-school type. You tag your partner, not just going jumping in and out when your partner's going in without tagging. I was like,
yeah, it's a Lucha thing, but the problem with it is it makes the faces look like heels. And it makes the heels look like the underdog faces. I don't understand that. Now we're going to come up on another controversial thing. The AOP. And Drake Maverick. Against Bobby Roode and Chad Gable. And man, did people, no pun intended, piss all over this gimmick. But let me tell you again why I don't hate it. You're right when you say, oh my God, it's undermining AOP. All we're doing here is more urine gimmicks. Is this what Drake Maverick's going to be? Just some guy who pisses on everything or pisses himself every week? There's some kind of new piss thing? Think so. I hope not. And you're right. It does undermine AOP. And it does make AOP look silly, and it takes the attention away from AOP and puts it on Drake Maverick, which is probably not good for AOP. But here's why I'm not going crazy screaming about this. Drake Maverick was ridiculed and embarrassed and humiliated for pissing himself. One of the people who did it was Bobby Roode. Last night, Drake Maverick says, if you want to make fun of me for pissing myself, how about if I piss on your robe? I just don't think that's the worst thing in the world. I think it would have been better if it wasn't during the match, so AOP could have literally, you know, been put over as monster heels and not just guys who have to rely on distraction to win every match. But I don't think it was the most horrible thing in the world, because in some ways it's logical. In Drake Maverick's head, unless I'm giving the writers too much credit, in Drake Maverick's head, he's saying, look, this is a guy who made fun of me for pissing myself when anybody would have pissed themselves if they were grabbed like that by a giant, especially at my size. So I'm going to grab his robe, and he thinks it's so funny I pissed myself. How about if it's – would he be laughing if I pissed on him or his robe? And in a sense, I think what he's saying is piss on your stupid gimmick. I just don't think it's the worst thing in the world. The critics are right when they're saying it distracts from the AOP. And I don't want to see this ever again. But if this is where it ends, I don't think it's the most horrible thing I've ever seen, Todd. What do you think?
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, it's not worse or anything. It's just one of those gimmicks. It's just like, all right. It is what it is, technically.
Yeah, and I mean, it makes a little bit of sense from Drake Maverick's perspective, I guess. I think people are just mad because it's distracting from AOP and their, you know, the monster heels they could be, and it's true. That is true. But let's hope they put this to bed now. But if they have, I'm okay with this. I don't think it's that bad. I just don't. You got to remember, folks, that a lot of people who are complaining, you know, and you're 16 years old, you haven't seen wrestling from 15 years ago. Stuff like this happened all the time. And fans ate it up. And I know you say, well, times have changed. Yeah, but times have changed, and we don't want to go back to wrestling clowns and things, but we don't want to leap forward to it has to be 100% rigged MMA or it's no good, because I don't want to see that either. So Baron Corbin backstage runs into Alexa Bliss. And Alexa Bliss says, well, if there's ever anything I can do to help you, because I think you're doing a great job as the general manager, if there's anything I can do to lighten the load, let me know. And Baron Corbin says, well, actually, since you were such a good captain for the women's team at Survivor Series, there is something you could do. How about you take care of the entire women's division? And she says, wow, the entire women's division. Great. I don't think this is a bad thing again. People are screaming, but I don't think it's a bad thing. And I'll tell you why I don't think so. Number one, the announcers are saying, how can she be when she's on the roster? How can Alexa Bliss be that when she's still a wrestler? Well, Baron Corbin is. Baron Corbin wrestled last night. So that's a silly argument. This is going to give the women their own storylines, hopefully. And I don't think this is the worst thing in the world, and I actually think it may lead to Alexa Bliss taking over, completely taking over. And that's what I'm guessing is going to be happening in a short period of time. But even if it doesn't, I just don't think it's the worst thing in the world, because Baron Corbin, the WWE is very conscious that if you have Baron Corbin yelling at women, selectively persecuting women, making them wrestle two-on-one matches and ordering beatdowns, it's going to look bad. For Alexa Bliss to do it, nah, it's not going to look so bad. So I'm not against that either. I'm just not. I know this sounds weird because everybody's like, oh, man, I bet you Marcus is going to totally shit on this show. I mean, if you thought last week's show was bad. But I really don't think that this is that bad of a thing. There were some bad things on Raw. We're going to get to them. But so far, other than the Lucha rules thing, I'm okay with this so far. I understand it's not everybody's cup of tea, but give them a chance to rebuild something. Because right now I think they're trying to start something different. And the first leg of it, you know, if you're watching a new TV show and the first show is like, yeah, it's mostly establishing characters, it's not really exciting. This is what Raw felt like to me last night. Let's wait. Let's wait and see where this is going before we crap on it. So I'm okay with Alexa Bliss doing this. I think it could lead to some exciting angles. And she says she's going to be fine and she's going to get back in the ring. I don't know. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if anybody knows if that's true. We'll find out. So we get the announcement that, of course, Braun Strowman can't be in mixed match challenge anymore. So Ember Moon's new partner, Mr. Never Win a Match. Okay. Now, look, is it a funny gimmick? It is. But if this was their way, number one, this isn't even a team anymore because Ember Moon wasn't even the original member of this team. It was Braun Strowman and Alexa Bliss. And then Alexa Bliss got hurt and had to be replaced by Ember Moon. And now Braun Strowman has to be replaced by Curt Hawkins, and you're sitting there going, this isn't even the same team. It's a totally different team. And nobody watches it anyway, so it really doesn't matter. Ember Moon gets a win over Alicia Fox. It's all right. You know, it's okay. At least Ember Moon gets a win. At least they're trying to rebuild her a little bit after just humiliation after humiliation after humiliation. And, of course, that leads to the return of No Way Jose. Well, once again, I'm not excited to see No Way Jose because he's not been booked very well. But if you're, you know, again, if you're screaming, well, you never use your bench. How come we never see your bench used? Well, we saw Curtis Hawkins last night, and now we saw No Way Jose. They're using their bench. Not using them very well, but they're using them. He comes out and he basically is a way to start to rebuild perhaps Jinder Mahal, who's also suffered a lot of losses and needs to be rebuilt. Let's take this Monday Night Raw as this is the first episode of a new show. And let's forget about all the others. And it's really, so far, not that bad. It has its problems, but it's getting there. It's doing some good. So far, we've established three top heels. We've put over Elias as a top babyface. We've gotten a new general manager for the women's division only. Interesting. We've kind of ruined the gimmick with Gable and Rude, but we'll see where this is leading. I want to see what Chad Gable has to say about Rude being this distracted over a robe, because I have a feeling this might lead to Bobby Rude flipping. So far I'm okay. Yes, the revival being buried every week is bad, but perhaps, again, maybe I'm giving him too much credit, perhaps this is leading to the revival getting a few wins in regular rules tag team matches over the Lucha House Party, establishing, well, we're an old school team. We don't go for this ridiculous 3-on-2 thing. Or maybe they're going to flip. So far, Todd, I didn't think it was, you know, all that bad.
No, absolutely not. Wasn't that bad. It was not great or good either. It was just in between. It's just not bad. It's still a pretty good match there too. Like with the Lucha House Party and the Revival, it was not a bad match.
No, like the matches weren't that bad. You know, the actual match themselves weren't that bad. The execution of the matches aren't that bad. And I don't even think the booking is that bad yet. Again, say what you want about the Drake Maverick thing. It makes some sense. If the guy's getting picked on for pissing himself and he says, one of the guys who picked on me for pissing myself, I'm piss on his robe. How does that not make sense? Now we get a really weird Dean Ambrose thing. And again, I'm going to try to justify this because a lot of people said, this Dean Ambrose thing is starting to bother me, where he just keeps saying, everybody stinks and you probably got germs and I'm getting vaccinated before I come to, you know, this town or Houston or Texas or wherever I'm going, because these people probably carry all kinds of disease. I agree. This is a bizarre, bizarre promo. But hear me out. is it possible that Dean Ambrose, who everybody's saying, oh, now he's just getting cheap heat, saying how people have germs and he doesn't want to catch anything. Is it possible that Dean Ambrose is trying to portray he's paranoid of getting a disease like Roman Reigns? Is it him trying to say, I've been so wiped out mentally by what happened to Roman Reigns, I'm paranoid. I want vaccinations for everything. I think Roman Reigns might have got this through these idiot people or certain towns we went to or whatever. It's possible. It's possible that's what they're shooting for, is that he's a little crazed and paranoid. And if that's where they're going with it, and we're going to establish this more of Dean Ambrose being a paranoid person who doesn't want to get leukemia or any, some other disease, and has seen one of his former friends fall to it and just going nuts about it, maybe I'll give this a pass. I'm going to wait and see on this. I don't know where this is going. If Dean Ambrose just keeps saying, hey, you're all stuck in the town, then I'm with you. But if they're trying to highball this a little into a Dean Ambrose has become a paranoid kook over what happened to Roman Reigns, maybe it could establish a weird storyline somewhere that I might be interested in. We'll see. So what do we have next? Let's see. I guess up next was the... Well, let's talk about the horrible Nia Jax promo. Nia Jax and Tamina Snuka, who collectively have about as much charisma as a wet sponge. The problem with Nia Jax isn't that she can't get the words out that she wants to say. It's that she's not getting heat. She thinks it's heat. It's not heat. People just don't want to hear her talk because she's just annoying. And she's not annoying in the right way. She's not annoying in the, I hope Ronda Rousey comes down here and beats her ass sort of way. She's annoying in the way of, I just want to shut the TV off because her whiny voice and her stupid, facial expressions, it's annoying me. It's just annoying. And Tamina Snuka looks, again, like, somebody wound her up backstage and she walked out like a robot. In the history of professional wrestling, I don't know if there's anybody with less charisma than Tamina Snuka. So Ronda Rousey comes out, and I'm expecting this Ronda Rousey that we saw before where, man, she just lets people have it. But she acted weird last night again. Sometimes it happens with Ronda Rousey, and she, again, started to stumble over her words and start laughing. That's what she does when she forgets. She's like, okay, I know you won the Royal, the Rumble, and thank you, everybody. So you won the Rumble, and that's fine, and I get it, and you can't do this, Ronda. You can't do it. I know you want to acknowledge the crowd because you get really upset when they boo you. So you're really happy when they cheer you, but you can't do it. You just got to come down there with fire in your eyes. Now, when you started this promo, you were terrible. And then you got a little bit better into it when you called out Tamina Snuka for being a mute. I thought that was funny. When she said she was going to tear Nia Jax's arm off and beat Charlotte Flair with it, I thought that was pretty good. But then, unfortunately, we get a potential beatdown of Ronda Rousey from Nia Jax and Tamina Snuka to be interrupted by Natty, to be interrupted by the Riot Squad. And now the booking is starting to feel like we don't have a lot for any of these people to do, so everyone's just going to have back jumping beatdowns. Everybody's getting a beatdown. Everybody all night long is getting a beatdown because we got nothing to do with the rest of these people. Everybody's getting a beatdown. And it didn't end there. It's not going to end there. So this I did not like. I don't think this helped anybody in any way, shape, or form. I don't think it furthered the Ronda Rousey-Nia Jax feud. I don't think it really did anything, Todd. It smelled of lazy writing and a way to just get all the girls into one spot.
No, you're absolutely right, Jerry. Like you said, it was this lady writing right there who ever booked that little skit right there with Ronda Rousey and the Riot Squad, Nia Jax, Tamina, and Natty. I'm thinking to myself, who wrote this little script right here that sounds like garbage?
Well, I'll tell you who wrote it. Somebody who said, how do we get as many women in one segment as we can because we don't got no time for them? And that's exactly what that was all about. That's exactly what that was all about. And then Ronda Rousey kind of chases off the whole Riot Squad. And that was bad. I admit that was bad. That was one of the worst things on last night's show. One of the very, very, very worst things. Just hideous. But they were about to top it. Because Alexa Bliss finds Sasha and Bayley and says, look, I am the new women's general manager, so to speak. And while we haven't always seen eye to eye, I know you were a major factor in winning the Survivor Series. And for that reason, I'm going to have you guys come out and field questions from the audience. The audience is actually going to get to ask the women wrestlers a question. Now, the minute she said this, I knew this was rigged because you just can't take that chance. You can't take the chance of some pervert standing up and saying something, or somebody blurting out another wrestling federation, or trying to use that moment to promote themselves, or you're not going to do that. If you were ever going to do that, you're going to do that taped and edited. So you knew right from the start no one was going to get picked from the audience. But I was intrigued because I said this could potentially lead to a gimmick. I mean, maybe Alexa Bliss has planted some people in the audience to say derogatory things to them. I don't know what's going to happen. Let's find out. Well, what ends up happening is if after Alexa Bliss insults a few people and says, no, you don't get to ask a question, they find some planted girl who says, what would you change in the women's division if you could change any one thing in the women's division? Bayley says, well, I'm pretty happy with it. You know, the only thing I would maybe change is I would ship Alexa Bliss's ass back to SmackDown. And then Sasha says, well, I would disagree with that. I would get rid of her altogether. And Bayley says, send her back to hell where she came from. It really started. It was bad. The women's segments on this show were not bad. They were hideously bad. They were embarrassingly bad. So bad I felt actual sympathy for them having to do it. Just bad. This is the worst thing on the show. This was an embarrassment. And what does it lead to? Another beatdown. But this time, for no reason at all, Dana Brooke is in with the bad guys. Did I just not see Dana Brooke on the good on the babyface side? Did I not just see that? I'll tell you where I saw it. Starrcade on Sunday. Sunday was it? Yeah. It was taped, but Sunday. And now for whatever reason, she's a heel. No reason at all. And this is what aggravates me with the WWE, because they're just saying, yeah, we don't care. And furthermore, not only don't we care, we don't want you to care. Shut up, and she's a bad guy now because we say so. How do you expect us to get into any of these characters when there's no motivation for what they do? You would not do this with a male. We're not going to tune in Monday and have Drew McIntyre suddenly come out with Elias and say, I've changed my mind. I'm a big fan of Elias. I'm his roadie now. You're not going to do that. But you did it with Dana Brooke because you think Dana Brooke doesn't matter. And when you think your athletes do not matter, how do you expect us to think they matter? The answer is we don't. Truly hideous. And because I know the women only get two spots normally in the show, Todd, it made it even worse because I knew, my God, this is going to be one of the worst shows for the women of Raw in the history of Raw.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it's another worse segment with the women's division. It's not bad. It's horrible, terrible, hideous. Every name you could give
it. It was. It's frighteningly bad. It was so bad that I'm sitting there with my hand over my one eye saying, oh my God, they're going to destroy Bailey and Sasha. They are going to just destroy Bailey and Sasha. Now, for an eighth of a second, I thought to myself, my God, maybe this is where Sasha turns heel. Turns on Bailey and goes with Alexa and says, hey, you know, if she's going to be the GM, she's my new best buddy. I'd have preferred that over this because I don't even know where the hell this is leading. It's not leading to anything good, I can tell you that. So then Seth Rollins comes out and he says, you know, what he has to say about Ambrose. Ambrose says he's not here, but he might be. Well, you know what? It turned out he wasn't, so don't tease the crowd about that because that's just, you know, lame. But the open challenge is on because I want to be a fighting champion. A lot of people, because this got out, there was going to be an open challenge, and a lot of people were saying this could be good. We're probably going to see a call-up. Some people are even saying maybe it's going to be that Lars Sullivan guy. Who knows who's going to come out? But somebody big is going to come out. Something big is going to happen with this. Maybe it's Ambrose himself. Who knows what the hell is going to happen? It's Dolph Ziggler again. And you could feel the air get sucked out of that arena. Now, that's unfair, and I'm going to tell you why it is in a minute. But when Dolph Ziggler was announced, there was a collective... because here we go again with another repetitive match we've seen a lot of times. And fans really thought this was going to be fresh and new and maybe even a call-up from NXT or something. Something really unique. Instead, it's more lazy booking. It's going to be Dolph. Now, to their credit, they took that crowd from couldn't care less about this match and disappointed to chanting, this is awesome. It was a very strong match. Easily the best thing on Raw. A very strong match. These guys, and these guys always put on a pretty strong match. And I'm going to tell you something else that I think the WWE did right for a change. Seth Rollins wins with that combination of that suplex and Falcon Arrow bomb thing, okay? He's never pinned anybody with that. So every time you see him do it and he covers him for a two count, they always kick out. So when you're not getting excited when they say 1-2, you're like, no, he's not going to win with that. Well, he won with it. This is what I've been calling for I don't know how long. Take a secondary finisher and let him win with it once in a while. So when they hit it during a match, you're not sure whether that's going to be the end. It doesn't always have to be your main finisher that finishes things. Because if it is, we all know that match is not over. Most likely until they hit that move. And it becomes very, very predictable when the referee goes down for a two count that it's only going to be the two count. By doing it this way, I didn't think he was going to be pinned. I'm like, 1-2. He's, oh, no, wow, they did it. And I thought to myself, that's smart. That is a smart way to end this match. Because now you have a second established move by Seth Rollins. You actually have three now, don't you? He has that curb stomp. He has the knee. And now he has this bomb. All three of these have been proven to be able to pin an opponent. When you establish more than one move that will pin an opponent, your matches are always more exciting because you're not sure when that move is hit, whether it's the end of the match or not. And now you have three of them instead of one. So I thought that was a very, very positive thing that the WWE did. So for that reason alone, I thought this match more than lived up to expectations. And I forgive the Dolph Ziggler answering the open challenge because I think it was a healthy thing, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it was a pretty good move right there with what they did. Like you said, it's a secondary move he used. He never used that as a win or anything, the running knee or the curb stomp.
Right.
That combination of the suplex for the Falcon Arrow thing was pretty cool.
Because, Todd, how many times does Sheamus do white noise and go for the pin, and he never pins anybody with white noise? So every time you see him do the white noise thing and go for the pin, you're like, that's not going to be it. If they would establish these moves as once in a while it is it, then we're not sure as fans, and the matches automatically become more exciting.
Hardly ever you see him use the white noise as the main finisher for a win, really.
Never. So we know the move is bullshit. We know he always makes the pin attempt, but he never gets the pin. So nobody is on pins and needles when he goes down saying, this is it, because we know it's not it. You see how that works, gang? So now Seth Rollins has three. He has three moves that we as fans can say that could potentially be it. And you know the old saying amongst the wrestlers is, you know, a couple of fake finishes and the crowd will chant, this is awesome. Well, the only time you can really have a fake finish other than interference or referee doesn't see something, you know, foreign object hit, is if they hit their finisher and their finisher's kicked out of. And then that weakens that particular finisher. It's a very good idea to have multiple finishers established as able to win matches. Because then we are always thrown off when those moves are hit of whether this is indeed the end of the match. So I liked it. I like that. I like the match. I like the way they booked that. And I think that, you know, fans are being hard. What do you want? Okay, we didn't get a call up. Okay, we didn't get an underutilized guy. Who did you want to come out there? No Way Jose and just get beat? Is that going to be better? Curt Hawkins, is that going to be better? Not really. So if they use this match for no other reason than to establish that now Seth Rollins has a third move that can pin people, I'm good with it. I'm fine with it. So anyway, let's move on. We now, of course, have Baron Corbin with Finn Balor. And Finn Balor actually cuts a halfway decent promo, which he's not known for. And I'm sure it was heavily scripted, but he did a good job saying, look, if Baron Corbin says it's one way or the other, you're either with him or you're against him, then I'm against. And if it's bad for my career, well, I don't think so, because I'd rather do this than to be a lackey for the rest of my life to Baron Corbin. Makes sense. It's a good promo. And once again, now, Finn Balor, say what you want. I know there's a lot of people saying, Jesus, they're throwing Finn Balor to the wolves. He never wins. Blah, blah, blah. Right. But let's hit the reset button for a minute. Finn Balor has had a long feud with Baron Corbin. It's not done. What happened to Finn Balor last night is setting the table for a resistance. I hope it's setting the table for some sort of a resistance. Finn Balor got the fan sympathy. Now, it is lazy booking because they did the exact same thing they did to Elias, basically. The show began and ended with the same exact gimmick. And there's just been too many beatdowns on the show. Everybody's getting beat down. And I'm with you. I sympathize with you with, oh, God, here comes another authority gimmick. I get all that, but I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, folks. Let me see what they do with Finn Balor. Let me see what they do with Elias. Let me see what they do with Bray Wyatt, who's coming back. Because Raw can turn this whole thing into gold if they handle next week correctly. And all the naysayers right now who are saying, worst Raw ever, will say, oh, well, I see why they did that. Okay, well, then I forgive that. Oh, that's why they did that. Let's just wait. Because I got news. If in the next couple of weeks the Wyatt family come charging out there to avenge Braun in some weird way, and we got a reunited Wyatt family face team against this authoritarian Baron Corbin team, fans are going to like that. If Finn Balor gets a push out of this because he's going to be the guy who's also resisting this mob, fans are going to like that. because that makes Finn Balor the ultimate underdog, and that's what he's supposed to be. When Finn Balor first came in here and he wasn't the underdog, he was Superman. Doesn't matter how big you are. I'm tougher. I'm stronger. I can absorb all of your punishment. I'll just keep fighting. I'll stand toe-to-toe with Braun Strowman. I'll stand toe-to-toe with The Undertaker. I'll stand toe-to-toe with Samoa Joe. Bullshit. That's what hurt Finn Balor. Finn Balor is finally learning, no, I have to fight from the underdog perspective. Like Daniel Bryan. And that's going to work. But the only way you're going to have this work is if Finn Balor gets some crowd sympathy from, damn it, he would have won. Now we all know that Finn Balor was on the verge of beating Baron Corbin. And Baron Corbin once again changes the match rules and he gets a beat down and we get it. But all that really does, even in its laziness, is to establish Finn Balor as someone they're going to attempt to make one of their top faces, I would suppose. He ended Raw. You're not ending Raw with a mid-carder. Your feature match is not going to be a mid-carder. So that means they still have faith in Finn Balor. They still think, okay, Finn Balor is a guy we can end Raw with and get major heat for the bad guys out of. So I still think he's going to have a major part to play on Raw. So I can't kill this. Would you have rather seen Finn Balor fight Curtis Hawkins and just win in a two-minute match? So you all could say, oh, they're pushing Finn Balor again. No, they're not. They're pushing Finn Balor more by doing this than they would be to give him a win over Curtis Hawkins. Because this means they're taking Finn Balor seriously. It means they're taking Elias seriously. And it would not surprise me to see these guys put up some kind of a fight against this new authority team for a while until we get the reemergence of the Wyatt family. And I believe in my heart of hearts that's where this is going. If it's not going there, then the WWE are insane. Then you can call me up and say, oh, you gave them too much credit again, Marcus. They're brain dead idiots and they didn't do it. Okay, well then I'll be wrong. But I have to think, if you tested the waters in a dark match that nobody saw except the people that were live at Starrcade with Bray Wyatt against Baron Corbin and beating Baron Corbin, by the way, pinning him, and in doing so, knocking around Drew McIntyre and Bobby Lashley a little bit, that you got something big planned for Bray Wyatt. Because if this was just a dark match and you don't give a damn about Bray Wyatt, then Baron Corbin would have won. Correct? Why would you have Bray Wyatt fill in for Braun Strowman in a match no one's going to see except the live audience and win? You just say, oh, no, we'll have Baron Corbin win to get more heat and Corbin can stay undefeated and for a while and his little team of people will be, you know, run roughshod. No, you let Bray Wyatt pin him. And then they restarted the match. They did the same gimmick, and Bray Wyatt still cleaned house. Something's coming here, folks. And I got to tell you that it might not be something that you're going to hate. It might be something you're actually going to say, damn, this is going to be good. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt that this Raw might be a restart button. This Raw might be the opening show to the new season, so to speak, where they're reestablishing people. They're finding some groundwork of what we're going to do, who's going to be the top guys, who's our bench, who's our mid-carders. And I only think they dropped the ball in a few instances. They dropped the ball on the women's division spots, all of them. They did not drop the ball having Alexa Bliss become the GM of them. But they did drop the ball with those segments because Nia Jax is a stiff. And let me just say this, and this may be controversial, I really don't care. Nia Jax is in this federation for one reason. She's large. And maybe two reasons. And she has the bloodline. Because if she had neither one of those things, she would be gone. She's a liability in the ring. She has zero charisma. She has zero mic ability. So where is her plus side? Her plus side is she's a plus size. That's it. That's it. Trust me, that's it. Paley and Sasha were made to look like idiots. The Riot Squad were made to look like the three of them couldn't fight off Ronda Rousey. Tamina Snuka was just, once again, just a wind-up walking around the ring with her eyes bugging out of her head. And the division looks poor. And I agree, the tag team division looks terribly poor. Terribly poor. But let's see where it's going. Let's just see if there's a method to their madness. Right now, we are looking at this from a perspective of this is the bazillionth show in a chain. But let's not look at it from that perspective. Let's look at it from this is the first show of a new season, which it isn't. But let's just look at it from that perspective, because maybe the WWE hit the reset button last night. And if they did, a lot of the things they did were positive. Establishing that a wrestler can win by more than one move, with Seth Rollins finally getting a win with that. Establishing who's the top three or four guys you're going to use on top and the top baby faces that you're going to use. Furthering some feuds. Separating who's going to be the boss figures, who's going to be the backstage boss figures, who's going to run this and that. There's some things they did correctly last night. And I'm not as down on this show as a lot of people are. And I know I'm in the minority. Now, Mike is usually on our panel tonight. He's sick. Sent me a message. So get well to Mike. Hopefully he's feeling a little bit better. And Mike gave this show an F. And I wish he'd been on the panel today, because we could have debated this. Because I'm not going to give it even close to an F. I just don't think that we can punish the WWE for having a arguably bad show where there wasn't a lot of exciting things that happened, but reestablishing things that need to be established before they can go forward. The opening chapter to a book can't be the most exciting chapter. And I felt like this Raw was the opening chapter to the book. And for that reason, and that reason alone, I hear all of you people who are saying they buried the Revival, the women's division's terrible, the tag team division is terrible, this authority thing is just getting old, it's time and time and time again, Drake Maverick's doing nothing but pissing, either himself or on other people, this is awful. I get all that. But hear me out. Let's see where it leads. If they do more piss stuff with Drake Maverick, I'm with you. It's ridiculous. If they don't start building up other tag teams immediately, I'm with you. It's ridiculous. If Stephanie McMahon comes out and says, yes, Baron Corbin is the permanent general manager and the only people that's going to fight against him is Finn Balor and Elias, yes, it's ridiculous. But let's wait and see, because I truly think you have the Wyatt family reunion coming. I truly think that you have a really, really solid feud coming with Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins. And I do think perhaps Dean Ambrose is going to try to turn this gimmick into a much more cerebral one, where some fans will say, I kind of get why Dean Ambrose is going off the deep end. He can't deal with what happened to Roman Reigns. He can't deal with it. That's why it happened the night Roman Reigns announced it. Because psychologically, that moment, Dean Ambrose snapped and said it's going to happen to all of us. This is because of what we did. This happened to Roman Reigns because of what we did. When we were bad guys with the Shield, we're all going to get this. We're all going to suffer horrible fates. I think that's where this might be going. And if it's going there, it's actually one of the better gimmicks you could think of. Because that's reality. The way Dean Ambrose comes off, he's starting to look like a guy who's very paranoid he's going to catch something horrible and die. And he's already said it's going to happen to us all. One way or the other, something bad's going to happen to us. So let's just see if that's where they're going with this, because that's not a bad gimmick. Dolph Ziggler and Seth Rollins still prove they can get it on and really turn the crowd around and made them chant, this is awesome. Elias was funny. The heels were very well established. Finn Balor came out looking like an underdog you want to root for instead of a Superman who apparently can lift Braun Strowman over his shoulder and no-sell Braun Strowman's power slams. Finally a plus. So let's see. Let's just wait and see. And Bobby Roode lost because he was so distracted over his robe, a material thing, which establishes his ego. Let's see where Chad Gable, let's see where this leads Chad Gable and Bobby Roode, because this could be the beginning of that breakup. So let's take this as just the first chapter in a brand new season, and I'm going to give it a B-. I don't think I've ever disagreed this much with most of the panel and most of our listeners who was giving it Fs. Everybody's giving it F or Ds. I'm going to give it a B-, because there were some horrible things on this show. Don't get me wrong, but there were some very good, let's establish this thing sort of gimmicks that I thought was okay. I didn't turn off Raw last night saying, man, that was horrible. I turned it off saying that wasn't a great ending, and there was some bad stuff on this show, but I am a little curious where this is going to lead next week. And as long as they have got my curiosity factor up, that's a plus. So I'm going B-, Todd. How about you?
I got to go with you there. A B-, too, as well. There were some things I liked, some things were pretty cool, and some things I didn't like.
Yeah, maybe I'm being too kind, and maybe I'm giving it a B-, because I'm anticipating what could happen. But if this leads to the reuniting of the Wyatt family against Baron Corbin's guys, if this leads to Elias becoming much more of a face top guy, if this leads to Finn Balor finally fighting as the underdog that fans want to root for instead of the little superhero that somehow is indestructible, even though he's half everybody's size, that's a good thing. If this leads to the women's division getting their own storylines based around Alexa Bliss and what she does, that's a good thing. So there were bad things. Don't get me wrong. But maybe, just maybe, the groundwork that they laid last night is for good things going forward. At least that's what I hope. So there we have it, folks. I mean, I think I'm being fair. I crapped all over Raw last week because it led nowhere. There was nothing established last week. It was just all a horror show. But this week, I do see branches on trees. I do see storylines beginning to form in different directions and characters starting to be established, further established as what they're going to be. And that's what I've called for a long time. So I can't be a hypocrite and say, oh, I hated it. I didn't hate it. It was a little bit boring, just like the opening chapter to a book. You sometimes got to get by that first chapter and understand where all the characters are and what their motivations are and who they are going forward in the book before you put that book down and say, well, this opening chapter was garbage and I'm not going to read chapter two. So let's see what chapter two brings, and that'll be next Monday. And we'll see what, SmackDown brings tonight, and we'll be back here on Friday to give you our SmackDown report. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.